听力课堂，听 class.com。
B. 1. Great salaries are only one piece of what these multinational corporations are offering their people these days. 2. Extended mentoring programs are designed to ease new nurses' transition from school to the workplace. 3. The company pays for its employees to go back to school and allows them to have a greater say in the governance of the company. 4. While these career changers' backgrounds may differ, they share a similar motivation. 5. Perhaps they're attracted to the job stability or the salary, but most are interested in a different kind of payoff. 6. When the patient gets up and walks, Jane goes home walking on air. 7. These personal goals will enable you to compete for good jobs in light of your abilities, desires, and training. 8. In the past, too many women job seekers were forced to settle for second best. 9. His vision of gainful and satisfying employment is a lost cause. 10. Openings in the usual women's occupations will be insufficient for all women seeking work.
Part 2. In the U.S., the expected increase in information science-related jobs is 118% between now and 2006. There is a tremendous opportunity to position information professionals as in-house consultants who have the critical mission of educating new business professionals on how to evaluate content. This is only one example of how or why your job may change. Technology is driving much of the opportunity in the field of information management and knowledge systems. In today's environment, an understanding of library science, database and record management, and system design and implementation is essential. The challenge is to stay current. So whether you are attracted to a career that involves interaction and mentoring of fellow employees, or you're more inclined to a systems design and management role, open-mindedness and curiosity are key to securing opportunity in uncertain times. Change brings both opportunity and uncertainty. Curiosity, optimism, and flexibility may land you on a career path not actively contemplated. Don't let barriers to change, such as fear of failure or success, or fear of the uncertain, stand in the way of evaluating opportunity. By taking action consistently on your natural curiosity, you may well place yourself in situations that will transform unexpected events into career opportunities. In the end, the road that takes you there is often one that is not easily recognized at the beginning of the journey.
Part 3, Passage 1. The U.S. and global economies have become increasingly intertwined. Already 1 in 6 American jobs is tied to international trade and investment, and exports accounted for about 25% of U.S. economic growth over the past decade. Trade with Asia alone now equals over $800 billion per year, more than the nation's trade with Europe. No state and national policymaker in America can now afford to ignore the global economy and the rising demand for a workforce equipped with international knowledge and skills. Apparently, knowledge of other countries and an ability to work with people from other cultures is going to be needed by an increasing number of jobs and professions. It's not limited to the diplomatic community alone. The ability to handle international issues is becoming an essential asset for many professions, even in traditionally domestic industries. Most of America's growth industries, from multinationals to small businesses, are globally engaged industries, either through exports, imports, investment overseas, or joint research and business ventures. Now governors in every state care much about creating a workforce that is more adaptable to a changing economy. State economies are the economic engines of the nation. The future prosperity of the United States depends largely on the success of states in educating tomorrow's workforce and in providing their citizens with growth opportunities. With the increasing economic ties of each state to the world, the strategic importance of international knowledge and skills has become exceptionally clear. If states are to truly address the demand for international competency, they must work on not simply education policy, but also on workforce development policy and on economic development policy.
Passage 2. In recent years, the number of students receiving a PhD has increased significantly in both Europe and the United States. The Association of American Universities speaks of an increase of 34% from 1990 to 1995. A similar figure is observed in France, which is facing an increase of 54%. However, unemployment of American young scientists is far too lower. It made good sense for European governments in the 1980s to stimulate research, to increase the funding for PhD programs, and to offer permanent research and teaching positions. So far, almost 150,000 postdoctoral fellowships have been funded through EU fellowship programs. The investment of billions of euro for education and research will have been a waste of money if young engineers have neither a professional future nor an appropriate career plan. It is important, then, to anticipate changes and develop new strategies for assembling scientific expertise, creating new career profiles, and discovering new ways to apply science-based knowledge. These are likely to generate more new job opportunities for young scientists than conventional, early track tenured academic careers and industrial positions. Now, the United States leads in almost every scientific and technology sector and offers attractive working conditions that motivate young scientists to stay. To keep Europe in the race, it is absolutely necessary to invest more and more efficiently in free academic and institutional research and make Europe attractive to researchers. Fortunately, the European Union has already undertaken first actions to create an entrepreneurial climate in Europe, which could stimulate the creation of 30 million jobs by 2010, and most of them to come from small to medium-sized businesses.
Passage 3. In the past few years, employment in the U.S. computer and software industries has almost tripled. However, about 190,000 IT jobs still remain unfilled in the nation today due to a shortage of qualified workers. There is evidence that the United States is failing to meet the demand for new IT workers, and further evidence suggests that the demand will grow in the decade ahead. Among the many reasons cited for the shortage is the distorted and often negative image of IT professions among all age groups. Many young people do not think of IT professions as cool, and many adults fear new technology due to concerns of potential job displacement and a sense that preparing for those jobs requires knowledge and skills they do not have and believe to be difficult to learn. In fact, people have limited exposure to and knowledge of real-life IT professionals, and the IT professions are often portrayed as strange and foolish. Unflattering movies, combined with unflattering representations of IT professionals on television, have contributed to this unfavorable image. Even ads for IT workers have used terms like nerd and pictures of individuals with taped glasses. The image problem, then, complicates efforts to attract young people into programs that will prepare them for jobs and careers in the IT profession, and discourages adults from seeking the education and training to prepare them for new roles at work. It follows that a comprehensive, coordinated, and integrated marketing plan needs to be initiated with two different audiences in mind: young people through grade 12 and post-secondary, including adults. The initiative for young people would be of necessity and a long-term approach, while for adults, it should be more high impact and immediate.
Part 4. China has taken a proactive employment policy to increase job opportunities and keep the unemployment rate within a socially tolerable range, says a white paper issued here by the Information Office of the State Council Monday. The Chinese government has always regarded promoting employment as a strategic task for socio-economic development, says the white paper entitled China's Employment Situation and Policies. The government enhances the motive power of economic growth in driving employment while maintaining a steady and fairly rapid development of the national economy, says the paper. The paper says that China persists in taking the development of the service industry as a major orientation for the expansion of employment and encourages the development of community services, catering, commercial and trade circulation, tourism, etc., for the purpose of creating more job opportunities in these industries. In 2002, the government enacted the policy to support the increase of job opportunities by vigorously developing the tertiary industry. Moreover, the Chinese government encourages laborers to seek employment through flexible and diverse forms, and actively develops labor dispatch organizations and employment bases to provide services and assistance for flexible employment. The government has put in place a medical insurance policy for part-time employees and temporary workers and enacted regulations in respect of labor relations, wage payment, social insurance, etc., to promote and protect the legitimate rights and interests of those who obtain jobs in a flexible manner, says the white paper. In the past few years, the government has actively fostered and developed the labor market and has gradually established the enterprise's status as the major employers and the laborer's status as the major labor suppliers. Simultaneously, it has coordinated and propelled reform in the social security system, the residential housing system, and the household registration system to create a better environment for labor market development, the white paper says. Since the late 1990s, the Chinese government has established a public employment service system. Currently, at both city and district levels in large and medium-sized cities and some small cities, public job agencies have been widely established, which provide employment services to some 20 million people each year and have found jobs for 10 million people successfully. In the mid-1980s, an unemployment insurance system was established in China to provide unemployment relief and Medicare subsidies to the unemployed. By the end of 2003, 103.73 million people throughout the country had underwritten unemployment insurance policies, and 4.15 million people received unemployment insurance pay by the year. From 1998 to 2003, The accumulative total number of persons laid off from state-owned enterprises was 28.18 million. The Chinese government again has formulated a set of policies for promoting the re-employment of laid-off persons, including vigorously creating job opportunities, improving re-employment services, increasing financial input for re-employment, and strengthening skill training for re-employment. From 1998 to 2003, the central government's budget put aside a total of 73.1 billion yuan, about 8.8 billion US dollars, for basic subsistence and re-employment of laid-off workers from state-owned enterprises. In 2003, with the concerted efforts of governments at all levels throughout the country, jobs were found for 4.4 million laid-off persons, of whom 1.2 million were men over 50 years of age and women over 40 years of age, who had been considered as having difficulties finding re-employment. Apart from these measures, the government has established re-employment service centers, instituted the supportive policies of reducing and exempting taxes and administrative charges, and extending small security-backed loans for laid-off persons who set up their own businesses. Various service enterprises and commercial and trading enterprises are to be provided with social insurance subsidies if they employ laid-offs from state-owned enterprises for newly created posts, says the white paper. The Chinese government has explored a social security system independent of enterprises and public institutions. Since 1998, a system of continuation of social insurance relations for laid-off and unemployed persons has been in place. To ensure laborers' rights of employment, the Chinese government has urged enterprises to earnestly implement the stipulations specified in laws and regulations concerning equal employment, rectified all acts of discrimination in the labor market, and banned all employment advertisements containing discriminating content in the media. The government has continuously improved the state, industrial, and local standards in respect of job safety and hygiene. It promulgated the Standards for the Job Safety and Hygiene Administrative System in 1999. In 2003, the State Council promulgated the regulations concerning insurance for work-related injuries, which became effective as of January 1, 2004.
Unit 2. B.
Part 1. A. When I was a young lawyer at my first ABA meeting in San Francisco in 1972, recalls Detroit's Mayor Dennis W. Archer, I was struck by how very few African Americans were there. He was attending in response to advice urging him to get involved in bar activities at all levels. Some of the best advice I ever got in law school came from my property professor, Don Campbell, at the Detroit College of Law, Archer says. He stressed that I should get involved with my local bar association. The advice was right on target. In 1978, Archer became president of the Wolverine Bar Association, a black lawyers group. He was elected president of the National Bar Association in 1983. And in 1984, Archer became the first African American elected president of the State Bar of Michigan. At the same time, Archer was moving forward in the ABA, becoming active in committees across the board. In the Young Lawyers Division and the General Practice Section, which he chaired in 1987. Along the way, Archer was appointed to an ABA task force on minorities in the practice of law. Archer also served as the first chair of the ABA Commission on Minorities in the Profession. His work with this commission led to the ABA's first three-year Minority Counsel Demonstration Program, which, Archer declares proudly, helped to change the legal system forever. The program was a public commitment by corporate general counsel and majority law firms that when they need lawyers beyond their own employ, they will hire minority firms or ask majority firms to assign minority lawyers to their work. This effort also led state and other legal groups to create their own demonstration programs and statewide conferences.
B. 1. In the United States, minorities make up 20% of law school graduates. 2. They are willing to settle for inferior jobs because their stay in the labor force will be temporary. 3. John is not seriously attached to the labor force. 4. Employers' attitudes about women's roles in society still leave a lot to be desired. 5. The newspaper people must keep the old flourishing at the same time as they venture into the new. 6. From about 1915 to the late 1940s, large movie studios control the three branches of the U.S. movie industry. 7. Smith has had only one black clerk in the 7 years he has served on the court. 8. John seems to be all thumbs when he handles tools. 9. A good knowledge of history is not required for most jobs, but history helps you learn to remember facts and details. 10. If the highest court in the land doesn't reach out to minority law clerks, this sends the wrong message to corporate America.
Part 2. In the next 15 years, Forrester Research predicts that 3.3 million service jobs will move to countries like India, Russia, China, and the Philippines, with the IT sector leading the way. The sector services industry is expected to be another major job exporter, according to consulting firm A.T. Kearney, shifting more than 500,000 jobs, or 8% of its U.S. workforce, abroad by 2008. The debate at major financial services companies today is no longer whether to relocate some business functions, but rather which ones and where. Any function that does not require face-to-face contact is now perceived as a candidate for offshore relocation. That may be a slight exaggeration, but there's no doubt that U.S. financial services firms are making explosive moves overseas. GE Capital's International Services Unit, which provides everything from risk calculation to IT services, an actuarial analysis for GE Worldwide, has grown from 634 employees to 17,000 during the past 5 years. More than half those workers are in India, and they're not being used for mindless data entry. In India, every employee has a college degree, and more than 1,200 have MBAs. Even healthcare, the one industry in America that has proved it can raise prices almost at will, is picking up on the benefits of globalization. In the U.S., radiologists are among the best paid medical specialists.
Part 3, Passage 1. The U.S. economy and the American workplace have changed dramatically in the past 40 years. The skills needed for a successful living have altered radically, primarily as a result of the technological revolution and its impact on most jobs and professions. But American schools, by and large, are still geared to produce students for a nation that, in many ways, no longer exists. Schools of education must provide school systems with prospective teachers who can help students function in our new society. And that means that the teachers themselves must gain new skills and new knowledge. For too long, teacher preparation and licensing have been hostage to the status quo. Some promising reforms, such as year-long internships and the concept of the professional development school, have been developed, but they are still not the norm. Most systems find change difficult, and education is no exception. We must find new incentives to stimulate change throughout the system. The field has begun to rise to the challenge. Since the mid-1980s, education has engaged in unprecedented standard setting for students and for teachers. Standards for what beginning and experienced teachers should know and be able to do are now being developed. The new standards emphasize teacher performance, and this emphasis is leading to more rigorous teacher assessment than ever before. Out of the various sets of standards and emerging assessments, a system of quality assurance that is already used by other professions is beginning to evolve. Such a system should ensure quality in teaching. It is composed of sets of standards within three interconnected systems: accreditation of institutions that prepare teachers, performance-based initial licensing, and certification of accomplished teachers.
Passage 2. The banking and financial system, as well as its supporting services, employs some 135,000 people in Switzerland and roughly 18,300 in Geneva. That is 13.5% of the sector's overall employment for Switzerland as a whole, and approximately 50% for the French-speaking part of the country. These employees account for a society within a society. For banking and finance activities attract hundreds of different trades and professions which are not necessarily specific to the sector. Not only do banks employ specialists such as foreign exchange dealers, financial analysts, and managers, they also give jobs to lawyers, computer specialists, secretaries, receptionists, etc. Some work in both the front office and others in the back office. The front office covers all the jobs in which employees interact directly with customers. There are tellers, consultants to private or commercial customers. Training as a specialist in documentary credit or in international trade, or as an investment consultant or as a financial consultant. It all leads to a job in the front office. In addition to professional competence, these jobs require tact, diplomacy, listening talent, easy contact with customers of various backgrounds, and, in many cases, knowledge of foreign languages. Administrative jobs are found in the back office. Cut off from direct interface with the customers, this is the place for logistics, where employees perform stock exchange transactions, investments, and money transfers. Brokers trade stock and deal on the metal and foreign exchange markets. Financial analysts study and assess companies quoted on the stock exchange in order to develop an investment strategy. It is the place not only for portfolio managers, but also for the logistical support required by the bank's daily operations, like data collection, clerical tasks, correspondence, accounting, etc.
Passage 3. Speech-language pathology and audiology will be among the hottest professions in the country in the next decade. According to recent employment growth projections in the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics 2002 to 2003 Occupational Outlook Handbook, they rank among the top 30 out of 700 fastest-growing occupations over the next decade, with the number of audiology positions expected to climb 45% and the number of speech-language pathology positions to grow by 39% from 2000 to 2010. Several key trends will contribute to the growth of these two professions. For example, as America ages and the population over age 55 increases rapidly, the number of people with hearing loss will continue to climb because hearing loss is strongly associated with aging. Then, baby boomers are now approaching middle age, a time when the possibility of neurological disorders and associated speech, language, and hearing disorders increases. Again, medical advances have improved the survival rate of premature infants, trauma, and stroke victims, bringing the need for speech, language, and hearing assessment and treatment. And finally, greater awareness of the importance of early identification of speech, language, and hearing disorders also will increase employment. Data from states show where jobs can be found in the future. Across the United States, the growth rate for speech-language pathology and audiology jobs ranges from 19% in South Dakota to 63% in Nevada from 1998 to 2008. Another 9 states, such as Arizona, California, and Georgia, will have a 50% or more increase in jobs in the next decade. In addition, growth in the number of jobs over the next decade will range from 50 jobs in Alaska and Delaware to 4,500 job openings in California. Another 10 states like Florida, Illinois, Indiana, and New York top the charts with 1,200 or more job openings expected between 1998 and 2008.
Part 4. In the eyes of many Hong Kong residents, China's mainland was always a picture of poverty and underdevelopment. But times are changing. The rapid economic development north of the Oriental Pearl is now a magnet to many of those Hong Kong folks who have shed their prejudices and are in favor of advancement. Tang Zheng, 32, left Hong Kong in March this year for a new job in Beijing. Emigration to the West is no longer a popular topic in today's Hong Kong. Everyone is talking about going northward. Tang explained how Hong Kong talents are moving to large cities on the mainland like Shanghai and Beijing in search of new opportunities. Statistics show at least 300,000 Hong Kong people are now residing and working in China's mainland, while another 200,000 commute between the two from time to time. There are even more flowing in. In 2001 and 2002, the number of Hong Kong employees in Shanghai rose by 562 and 964 respectively. This year, till September, nearly 1,000 Hong Kong residents have been granted job certificates to work in the mainland's largest business hub, and the annual addition is estimated at 1,300 to 1,400. The fundamental reasons, experts believe, include the sound economic development on the mainland and, at least, more handsome income. The annual Asia-Pacific Salary Increase Survey conducted by Hewitt Associates, a major HR consulting firm, indicates in 2003 Chinese employees continued to enjoy average salary increases ranging from 6.7 to 7.3%, though those in top management saw lower increases, while employees in Hong Kong were left with increases in the range of just 1.3 to 1.5%. As for the coming year, a pay trend report released by Human Resource Management warns that a pay freeze seems the most likely scenario, while Mercer Human Resource Consulting predicts that major cities on the mainland will see a 6.96% pay rise in 2004. The salary increases, which are an important employee incentive, are by no means the sole factor in directing Hong Kong professionals' northward flow. Many conclude that a closer economic partnership between Hong Kong and the mainland is another force driving the HR move, particularly in view of the Closer Economic Partnership Agreement, CEPA, between the mainland and Hong Kong, which is to be effective on January 1, 2004. Under the CEPA, Hong Kong companies in a wide range of services industries can benefit from market access measures above and beyond the mainland's WTO membership commitments. Not only Hong Kong companies, but also Hong Kong professionals and residents will benefit from the agreement. Hong Kong professionals in the securities and insurance industries can apply to practice on the mainland, and permanent Hong Kong residents are permitted to sit for the national judicial examination on the mainland. Moreover, permanent Hong Kong residents are formally allowed in retail activities in Guangdong Province adjacent to the region. Many companies on the mainland, not only those foreign invested, but also local ones, are extending open arms to the new arrivals. According to a recent survey by 51job.com, a major Chinese HR website, 50% of the surveyed companies employ Hong Kong professionals, and another 10.8% indicate they are planning to take in more. The reasons given by the survey are quite understandable. Hong Kong has a highly qualified talent pool in such fields as finance, real estate, and securities, all of which are where mainland companies face a shortage. With both international vision and better understanding of local culture, Hong Kong employees are surely favored by many mainland employers. In testimony of Hong Kong people's mainland fever, Shanghai, where nearly 40,000 Hong Kong employees have registered, is planning to open 2 more registration offices in Hong Kong to receive job hunters. For the existing reception center, crowded by applicants from early morning, is obviously far from adequate. But nearly 10 years ago, it was not the case at all. Reluctant Hong Kong professionals, attracted mostly by the high salary and senior positions offered by foreign companies on the mainland, summoned up their courage and pioneered into the unknown north. Since 2003, some Hong Kong job hunters, including university graduates, indicate in various surveys that they are willing to accept discount salaries by 30 to 40% off to work for a mainland employer. Some college students are even prepared to work for free just to set up a business network for future development.